Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, January 19th, 2014. This is episode 1050. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover's the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, it's honest, it's easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com/TechGuy1. And use our offer code, TechGuy1. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm. They're better. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TechGuy to get $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle. The fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time, yes indeed, to talk about, you know, technology and the way it's changing our lives, changing how we work and play, how we worship, how we entertain ourselves, how we communicate. Computers and the internet and smartphones and cell technology, mobile phones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. Chris Marquardt, our digital photography expert, joins us at 5:30 the next hour to talk digital photography, too. See, we talk about everything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. I don't mention it enough, and I should plug the website, which is techguylabs.com. And the reason you want to keep track of that, really, it's the only thing you need to keep track of, techguylabs.com. Just put it on a post-it note or something on your computer. The hacker will think it's your password. It's good. Fool them. Techguylabs.com. When you get there, you'll see not only the phone number, but you'll see every show we've done, audio and video from those shows, plus questions and answers and comments, too. So you can add to the answers if you have a better idea or you want some, you know, add your 2 cents. And it's all divided up. We also have our tip of the week and our product of the week and lots of information there. It's techguylabs.com. Always free. No subscription needed. You don't have to pay me a penny. Our fine sponsors keep this thing afloat. Techguylabs.com. Also there, you'll find a link to our lovely chat room where people gather to help me out in the show and to talk football, apparently. is there a football game on? I didn't know. Okay. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number to call. And I don't know. Did you watch? I'm curious. If people watch the president's talk about the NSA this week, you know, his response. On NSA reforms. Of course, the discussion began in June when NSA contractor, former NSA contractor, revealed much about the domestic as well as international spying the NSA was doing. It's interesting because this morning, all the Meet the Press and all those shows, a lot of members of Congress appeared to talk about the president's proposed changes. But no one was willing to say, you know, the NSA has gone too far or they're invading our privacy. It's, I guess, agreed that maybe we should perhaps pay attention to what they're up to. But everybody, and I don't blame them. No legislator wants to go on record saying, oh, you know, let's stop protecting ourselves. Because, you know, the next 9/11, they're the ones who ruined it for everyone. This is why it's so difficult to get these reforms. Privacy advocates wanted more, but at least the president acknowledged people who said that there was abuse going on. But he says, as president, I can't help but be reminded every day that Americans must be vigilant in the face of threats. So now, from now on, this is something I thought that they had to do, but apparently not. The Federal Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISC, will have to approve every query to the database. Oh, you know about the database, right? The database of every phone call made in the U.S., every wrong number, every busy signal, everything. The NSA has been collecting them and has not up to now required any judicial approval to search the database. They say, and I think they say it in a very disingenuous way, they say, oh, it's just metadata. We're not listening to the calls. We're just seeing who you call, when, how often, things like that. But as we've learned, that you combine that with another database, all of that metadata is incredibly valuable, perhaps more so, both to the NSA and to anybody else who wants to, you know, spy on you. Now, of course, the response from privacy advocates is, well, we'll see whether the court will be more demanding of the NSA than the NSA itself is. We shall see. The president also said the NSA, this actually worries me, won't hold the data. He didn't say it won't collect it. They just said, well, they won't have the database. It'll be stored somewhere else and the NSA will have to petition for access. But where is it going to be stored? I don't know. I hope it's not Target. We've learned over the last few months that that very few databases, if they're online, are safe. I'm glad we're having this discussion. I agree. And I also understand how difficult it is. I mean, the president's right. You don't want to be the guy or gal who says, we don't need this, and then there's a terrorist attack. The NSA is building a giant facility in Utah to hold the data. But I guess, what, do they stop the building now? Or give the building to Target. Let them keep track of stuff. Old school in our chat room says, I'll take care of it. I'll hold it. Who are you? Okay. Admittedly, I understand we're a little less trustful of the NSA than we were, but who is better to hold the data? Who do you give it to where it's safe? Google? Microsoft? Apple? Amazon? I don't know what they think, how this is going to work. 8888-ASK-LEAH. That's the number if you want to talk about this. I don't know. I'm just curious how many people watched the president's speech and discuss it and so forth. I mean, it's something in the tech community we're very aware of. But I don't know. Have we moved on? Are we more worried about who Kim Kardashian's going to be marrying than all of this? I don't know. We can talk about that if you would like. You know, there's lots of tech news. Of course, there always is. Big, this is very, I think this is a real revolution. An online degree program. Georgia Tech, in conjunction with Udacity, which is a really neat web-based educational system, is going to offer a master's degree in computer science that you could take online. A top-notch computer science education available worldwide at a price point that costs less than one-fifth it would cost on campus. 2,360 students applied within the three-week application period. It's over now. I'm sorry if you're just hearing about it. They say that's 75% more than normally apply for the on-campus degree. They have selected and accepted 375 people. They're beginning their online master's degree in computer science. That's pretty cool. Now, that's a paid one, and it's from Georgia Tech, which is one of the great computer science schools in the country, but it's not, you know, the only way you can do this. There are many free ways to study. You may not get a piece of paper that says you have a master's degree, but I think education is being revolutionized by the internet, and that's great for people who can't get to a school or can't afford a school. What an amazing opportunity, whether it's iTunes U or Coursera. Khan Academy. There's so many great. Udacity itself. Just fantastic. Just great. I know. Oh, there's so many things I could. I don't want to go back to the NSA, but I guess we could. There's one story here. The Congress has finally given up on asking the NSA what it's up to, so they now have asked one of my favorite security experts, Bruce Schneier, a blogger, to explain what the NSA's doing. NSA won't tell us, they say, so Congress says, Bruce Schneier, come and brief us. What a story. Leo Laporte, the ticket. Let's go to the phones right after this. Our show today brought to you by Hover.com, our favorite domain name registration company. These are the podcast sponsors. They make it possible for us to do the podcast. Hover, the best way to not only to buy but to manage domain names. Not a lot of cruft in between you and your domain registration. Not 800 things you have to say no to. In fact, I want you to visit Hover.com. Go to Hover.com/TechGuy1. I guess they want to know what month it was. Hover.com/TechGuy1 and the number one. And find out about Hover. Hover makes it easy to register a domain name. Cheap. Not cheap. I shouldn't say cheap. Affordable. That's a better word for the same thing. They don't have heavy-handed upselling. They don't charge you for something that should be there. For instance, they know you want privacy, so they build in Whois privacy. That's part of the deal. No extra cost. URL forwarding, subdomains, everything you want with your domain. No more, no less. Great smart control panel so you can control everything. Oh, all the big domain extensions, .com, .net, .org, .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz, .io, even country codes like .ca, .asia, .us, and UK. You can even get a great email address. In fact, one of the things I recommend people do is not use, you know, myname@gmail.com or myname@outlook.com, but get your own domain name. I have Leoville, for instance. I actually have leolaporte.net. I just got a note from Hover. I should renew that. So I can have email, you know, I could say, hey, I'm going to have all my email, leo@leoville.com or leo@leolaporte.net, and then have Hover forward it to Gmail or Outlook or wherever I want it to go. That way, when I change mail providers, doesn't matter. The email address doesn't change. Great support, too. No hold, no wait, no transfer. Phone support. When you call them during business hours, you'll speak to a live person, somebody who's really empowered and eager to help. Of course, help@hover.com, too. Read all about it, hover.com, visit hover.com/techguy1, and if you use the offer code techguy1, you'll save 10% off your first domain name registration. All my domains now are, here, let me sign in, I'll take it off the screen so I can sign in, I'll show you. All my domain names are registered at hover.com, and that's a lot of them. And I love the domain, these are all my names. Some of these I could probably let go. But you know how it is. You start registering domain names and you can't stop. I love Hover. See, I've registered Twit through 2016. My kids' names I registered through 2020 because I figure by 2020, if they – see, right now Henry doesn't use henrylaporte.com. Abby doesn't use abbylaporte.com. But I figure by 2020 they'll know if they want it or not. Gosh, that's only 6 more years, isn't it? When I did it, it was for 10 years. I've got, you know, if you're a ham, having your call sign as a domain name is great. Hover.com, manage them easily, mess with them, register them, bulk edit them. You're going to love it. Hover.com, which one's renew? I got to renew those. Let's see. Sort it by date. TechGuyLabs.com. I got to renew that. Ooh, let's renew it right now. Holy cow. Holy cow. Hover.com. All my domains belong to Hover, says Web9803. That's it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, just, you know, Skype us. The phone ranger, Heather Homan, is taking the calls. helping me get people on the line here, because it would be such a boring show. If it... We almost had that yesterday, didn't we? Phones died on us. I thought, oh, no, do I have to do 3 hours just me talking? I could do it. I don't want to do it, but I could do it.
By someday the, I won't be here, and you'll just be like, hello?
By the third hour, I'd be talking about, you know, my recipe for coffee. So who should I? But I see we have a full board, which is nice. Lots of callers all over the country. We've got Michigan, Massachusetts, Colorado, New York, and California. Who should I go to first?
True that. Let's talk to Mike in Detroit. I especially love his question.
Well, good. I especially love Detroit. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Good morning to me.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a long-time listener, watcher, TWIP program, bunch of them.
Thank you.
And currently, I'm a Netflix and Prime member for my movies and programs, and I'm currently looking at either Spotify or maybe Google Play for music.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of your sponsors, Audible.com, I'm interested in that for the books.
Oh, man, I listen to so many audiobooks. I just love it.
My question is there anybody that's going to do it all? Instead of having to have all these individual memberships, is Google or Amazon... Is anybody able to do it now or looking at being able to just provide?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, Apple has audiobooks, music, video, TV. I guess Apple would be the closest. iTunes would be the closest. But you have to live in the Apple world, right? So that's kind of a drag.
Okay, I'm mostly a Windows user. I do have Apple products.
Apple's the closest. So let's you want music, you want TV shows, you want movies. And by the way, nobody has all the movies. So you mentioned Amazon Prime and you mentioned Netflix. Those are unlimited streaming. So you can, I mean, they don't have every movie, but the movies they have, you can watch free anytime. Apple does not do that. In fact, those are, you know, there are only a few companies that do that. Audiobooks. Apple has Audible books. So they don't offer all of them, but the best seller. For instance, and then there are weird deals. Like Apple made a deal that only Apple would be able to sell the Harry Potter audiobooks, even though they come from Audible. You can't get them at audible.com. You have to go to iTunes. So what I'm saying is the world is horribly chopped up right now. And I don't see any move towards making it all in one. On the other hand, I remember for years we thought this would be a problem. Like, oh, people don't want to have 20 different $5 charges a month. You
That's
know?
Where I'm at right now. Yeah. That's what I'm being right there.
But I think...
Managing all these different memberships.
I think... Maybe I'm unusual. I think we're getting used to the idea. And we just go, well, it's on the credit card. I don't have to pay that much attention to it. Every once in a while, I might want to think about what I'm subscribing to. But I think we've kind of gotten used to the idea that instead of one ginormous cable bill... of over $100, we have a bunch of smaller bills, and they just get paid automatically. We don't have to think about it. I think people are getting used to that. I don't know. That's what you're trying to avoid.
Kind of, right. Anyways, they get you in the long end, because when you add up all those totals, it's still the same amount of money.
Yeah. You think you're going to save money? Not if they can help it. There is one way to get everything you want for free. It's called piracy. And this is the smart music, TV, the smart content creators understand that the real competition is not Amazon or iTunes or Spotify. The real competition is piracy. And I think in the long run, that benefits us because they're going to keep prices down. They're going to make it easier to do. I'm curious, are people getting used to the idea? Somebody's telling me Amazon does sell audiobooks. You can, of course, buy audiobooks. I'm not saying that, but... Amazon and iTunes are probably the closest to having everything. But then you're still paying onesie twosie.
Right.
I'll tell you, I use Google Music for my music because it's got radio, Pandora style radio. Plus I can upload all of my music to it. So it has everything I've ever bought and it has a store. And it's a flat monthly rate, Spotify-style rate, to listen to any of their songs. So from my point of view, music, Google is a very good choice. So that eliminates Pandora and Spotify and iTunes for music. TV and video, the problem is nobody has everything. So I use Amazon a lot. I use Netflix a lot. Occasionally, iTunes will be the only place I can get a movie. So I think that we're not seeing, I don't think we're moving in the direction of consolidation.
Okay.
I think you just have to get used to it. And you're right. One of the reasons they do that is it hides the fact that you're still paying $100 a month.
Right.
You're just onesie-twosing it. Yeah. There are now newer companies that are doing the Netflix model, the all-you-can-eat monthly fee model for books, for audiobooks, and e-books. I think the selection isn't as vast. I don't know if publishers are going for it. There's companies that do that for magazines. There's an iPad app, for instance. What's it? Next Issue, I think it's called, where you can buy a rack of magazines. So there are people trying different things. Maybe in the future this will all shake out. My suspicion is that the direction we're going to end up going is that you go direct. I would like to see, in fact, that you go directly to the content creator and pay them. Eliminate the middleman, because the middleman just adds to the cost. So that if I want to watch Game of Thrones, I go to HBO and I buy or rent Game of Thrones. If I want, instead of going to iTunes or Amazon. I don't know. Maybe it's easier to have one place, isn't it? I think the issue of, this is called cord cutting, isn't it? Where I say, I don't want a cable bill. I want to get my content from other places. I want to have I just want an internet connection. I don't need cable. And I think there's a lot to be said there. We want to do a new show on our Twit network, our podcast network, about this idea of getting everything on the internet. The internet generation for content. Even games now. If you buy a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One, they're still selling DVDs with games on them, that you'd buy the DVD and install the game, but increasingly moving in the direction of, you're just going to download the whole game. Everything will come in over the internet. 8888 Ask Leo. It's an interesting, how do you get your content? It's an interesting question. And how would you like to get your content? Do you really want, Mike, one place? I understand that for billing it'd be easier, but do you don't want really, like, one? This is why we're fragmenting. The record companies got scared that iTunes became the place to sell music. They overpowered everyone, and that scares them. They don't want Apple to have that much power. 8888 Ask Leo, how do you want to get your content? One source, many sources, even knowing that many sources mean you'll have many bills. 8888 Ask Leo. And yeah, Waikiki Guru says, and I don't want any commercials. Well, guess what? We're going to take a break for commercials. I think it's great to have some media be free and ad-supported. Certainly, that's what I do. All of the stuff I do is free and ad-supported. I like that idea. Then you don't get a bill at all. You just listen to our fine advertisers. And we're very careful. We pick good advertisers. It's another way to go. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If I were to call the internet the internut from now on, would that drive you crazy?
I really want to do that. I think it's a great
idea.
Just
some show, but you can't announce it ahead of time. But some show, I should just come in and just say it wrong, internet, the whole show, and just see what happens.
Is April Fool's on a Saturday?
That'd be a good day.
Saturday?
That'd be a good day to do it. Just see what happens. You know what I would do? It would annoy people so much, they would be throwing things at the radio. It's the internet. Well, sometimes people say the internets.
Which is really fun.
And that's kind of annoying, isn't it?
Is it?
I don't know.
I thought it was just sort of a meme, like, hey, I say...
It is. It's a meme.
Yeah, because I'm making fun of a certain ex-president.
oh, really? Oh, that was somebody actually said it and thought it was real, internets?
I thought George Bush did that.
He called it the internets? No, I just thought it was a thing. Mark in Tustin, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. By the way, my preference is if I'm buying, I buy the physical media because of, say, Disney taking stuff away.
Right, which they did.
And if I'm renting, and by the way, I only have one bill for everything. It's called Visa.
Well, that's why I think people are getting used to the idea of having multiple bills. You just put it on the credit card. Even if it's recurring, you don't have to pay any attention to it.
Right. Okay, I have a question. I'm trying to set up, training videos for my customers, and although I do computers, I'm not much into the arts stuff. And so I tried to set up my iPad with my Blue Parrot, so that I could just set the iPad up and film me, like, you know, doing whatever, the proper way to blow out a computer, anyhow, and just different things. But the Blue Parrot didn't work. So what I'm wondering
is... Blue Parrot is a Bluetooth headset. The problem with Bluetooth headsets, the quality's low because they're designed for phone use.
Okay.
So you can't really use those as a... I understand how you're thinking of this is I want a wireless microphone, be on camera, and because it's Bluetooth, the iPad hears it and records, and I don't have to worry about it. But the quality is like a phone call because it's a Bluetooth headset.
Okay, so what would you recommend for that and also for something to record myself as I'm doing, you know, like Khan Academy videos on, you know, how to use spin right, yeah. How to use sandboxy, that kind of
right.
stuff.
Oh, this sounds like a great thing to do, by the way.
I want to take somebody from a credit card and no computer and literally not have to have a professional and go all the way from a credit card all the way to a fully working computer with antivirus, sandboxy.
Oh, I love it.
Running spin right, all that.
I
stuff.
Love it.
Yeah, because that way my customers don't have to call me for the little calls.
So the deal with microphone, first of all, do it wired.
Okay.
I know it's a pain, but you're not that far away.
No. That's why I'm calling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, wired. You can get wireless mic. A good wireless mic, you're talking $600-$700. It's just
okay.
It's
well,
just
like,
prohibitive.
Which that's what I'm saying. It's like I want to do these videos. Which one?
Yeah. So what I would do is I would get a wired solution. Now, the next question is... the best way to do it is with a microphone that converts to a digital format that the iPad can understand. In other words, one with a lightning cable on it.
Okay. Well, I've got an older iPad.
Okay. They make them with 30-pin as well.
Okay.
When you do that, you get the best quality. This is a great... Now, it's $200. It's not cheap, but this is a mic I've used, and it's very good for recording both directly to the iPhone or the iPad or into a computer. It'll do USB as well. It comes with appropriate cables for both.
Perfect.
It's
okay.
It's called from Apogee Electronics, apogeedigital.com. It's called the MIC. Terrible name because it's so generic, but that's what it is. It's $200 though. But I tell you what, quality is excellent. Now, you're not going to wear that around your neck, but the good news is you can have it in front of you off camera, and it's great for the screencast thing you're talking about.
Okay. And then what do I do for actually the screencast part of this? What software should I use to be able to, you know, show my screen and then...
Are you Mac or PC?
No, it's all going to be for PC.
PC. I would say, go to screencast.com, TechSmith. It's not cheap, but they make a very good screencast program. There's also Camtasia, also not cheap.
No, that's fine, because I figure I'm going to sell, like, maybe for $10 a year to non-customers.
Right.
And I'm sure I'll be able to make my money back on if I do good quality production.
There's a friend of mine who does this screencasts online. He's a Brit named Don McAllister. He does it for Mac and Mac software training.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses, I believe he uses, he may use a Mac-specific program. The TechSmith stuff is Mac or PC. They do Camtasia Studio. They do Snagit, you know, depending on how much you want to spend. And then they have this screencastsingular.com. And that's a place for hosting it if you want to host it somewhere it's up to you. But
right.
TechSmith is the company, and I think they do really great stuff.
Okay. And then just out of curiosity, is there a reason why you don't just say put your videos up on something like I don't know what else to think of, but like a GoDaddy server that has unlimited internet?
Yeah, because nothing. Because nothing has unlimited internet.
Okay.
And there's bandwidth constrictions. So you can pay for a server with, say, a gigabit. Peak access and many gigabytes of download. But to give you an idea, our podcast network last month did almost, what was it, 950 terabytes of downloads. That would cost you an arm and a leg to go through a regular hosting company. You've either got to go through a content distribution network, still expensive, about 10 cents a gigabyte, or better yet, YouTube, which is free.
Right. Okay.
They put ads on it. But it's free, and everybody has access to it. Everybody's kind of used to the ads, so it's just prohibitively expensive, is I guess what I'm saying. Now, you could build that into your price, But generally, if you go to a content distribution network, which is the most affordable way to do it, if you want to pay for it yourself, it's 10 cents a gigabyte. Calculate that out.
Okay. By the way, a hint for you.
Yeah.
Wait for any subject. Wait for Obama's third speech, then the truth starts coming out. I'm not trying to tease. I mean,
no, but this is about the eighth speech on the subject, so I don't know what the truth is on this one. You know, you understand it's not Obama; it's everybody. This all started with George Bush in 2001, right after 9/11. I think what happens, a president gets in the Oval Office, they give him the threat assessment, which nobody else gets to see. You know, it's top secret, and he goes, holy cow.
Right.
Oh, I think we better do something about this. And I think that's what happened to Obama, who was very critical of this domestic spying before he became president. But as soon as you sit down in that chair and you're responsible for protecting the United States, it's a different matter. And I don't blame him or any president for saying we've got to do what we can to protect our people. But I also think that it's important that we recognize, and he says this over and over, and I hope he's sincere, that this country was built on the principle of the Constitution, of freedom and of liberty and of protecting our personal liberties. And so you have to balance security and liberty. Not an easy balance in this day and age when you've got real bad actors out there who want to take us down. And I don't know, but I would bet that you sit down on January 20th in that chair in the Oval Office and you look at the threat assessment and you go, oh boy, it's worse than I ever imagined. It's worse than I ever imagined. That's all I can imagine. I agree, we don't know, but no president has ever told us the whole truth. No president ever in the history of this country has ever told us the whole truth. I think there are good reasons probably that we are kept in the dark. But that's the idea of a representative democracy. We, in theory, have a Congress that is told the whole truth and then acts in our interest. That's called oversight. And that's, we need it. And I think to some degree, Congress has either been misinformed or has given up that role. 8888-ASK, Leo, this is not a political show, so I'll end with that. We'll talk more about technology in just a bit. 8888-ASK Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my good buddies, LegalZoom.com. You know, first thing I did when I started Twit, it was just me at the time. I called my friend Kevin Rose, who'd started a few companies, Dig, Revision 3, you know. And I said, Kevin, okay. First of all, I offered him a steak. I said, Kevin, to Patrick and Kevin, I said, you want to go in with me? They said, no. I said, okay, I'll do this. But can you give me some advice? Kevin said, yes. LLC trademark. I said, what? He said, you got to incorporate to protect yourself. It also makes it a real company. And you got to trademark your name, Twit, and your logo. I said, Kevin, I'm not made of money. This is, I can't afford. He said, no, LegalZoom.com. You don't need a big white shoe attorney legal firm to do the basic stuff. LLC is what I did. $99 plus state filing fees. And it's very simple. You walk through a step-by-step form, a questionnaire, and they help you. Incorporation, Chapter S or C, $99. Trademarks, you bet. Also personal stuff like your will. You ought to have, for instance, a durable power of attorney, a medical directive. Case, you know, healthcare power of attorney, all of that. They even do pet protection agreements. Hey, you know, don't knock it. What would happen to your kitty cat or your doggy if you passed? If you want help from an attorney, they do offer that, not at those inflated hourly prices, but a pre-negotiated flat rate with an attorney in your state. Look, over 1 million entrepreneurs have started their businesses at LegalZoom.com, and 90% of their customers recommend LegalZoom to family and friends, just like my friend Kevin. I want you to try it. It's not a law firm. They connect you with a third-party attorney if you need it. They provide you with self-help services from wills to business formation, trademarks, power of attorney. Go visit them. LegalZoom.com. Save on your legal needs. Wills for $69. LLCs for $99 plus filing fees. Don't put off the things you need to do. And get that business going. Best thing I ever did. LegalZoom.com. I'll tell you what. Use the offer code TechGuy. Let them know you heard it on the Tech Guy podcast. And you get $10 off at checkout. makes it even more affordable. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TechGuy. We thank them for their support. It's because of partners like LegalZoom, we can offer this for free. Sunday, bloody Sunday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I say that in the nicest way. I've worked Sundays for 30 years. I don't mind Sundays. I like Sundays. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. For the first time I can remember, you can watch the football games not only this weekend, but in 2 weeks, the Super Bowl online for free. Unbelievable. Fox is going to stream the playoff games. Now, I remember the last round, was it CBS? One of the networks required you to demonstrate you had a cable bill. That's what they do with HBO Go, right? Now, who's your cable company? You pay for HBO, right? Okay, then you can watch on your iPad or your iPhone. I think in some cases, you don't even have to do that. So that is the, you know, we were talking earlier about cord cutting, about eliminating the cable bill. One of the reasons people do not get rid of cable is sports, live anything. The Golden Globes, the Academy Awards, the Super Bowl. Those are things you have to watch live local TV for. And that's, you know, if you're lucky enough to be able to put an antenna up and get it from your local television station, That solves that problem, but a lot of people can't. A company called Aereo is going to have their day in court, the Supreme Court. Aereo, I mentioned this before, clever idea. Barry Diller, who was a big shot Hollywood agent for a long time and rainmaker in Hollywood, I think must have just gotten mad. And or maybe somebody came to him and says, Barry, I got an idea. They have antennas that are literally the size of a dime. They're tiny. So they could put hundreds of them on a circuit board, thousands of them in a box, up on the roof somewhere it started in New York City, in Manhattan. And then the business is, you as an Aereo customer pay them a monthly fee, I can't remember what it was, 10, 20 bucks a month, and you're renting that antenna. So you're not paying them for local content. No, heaven forfend, that would be illegal. You're paying them for an antenna. What you get over the antenna is up to you. It's over-the-air broadcasting. CBS, NBC, Fox have all sued saying, this is wrong. You're stealing. You're taking money out of our mouth. By the way, I find that a little puzzling because these are all broadcast networks that are free if you're in Manhattan over the air. But it turns out they make a lot of money on cable. So they have ads. They make money through the ads. And then they make another packet of money through the cable companies, and they don't want to lose that packet of money from the cable companies. They've gotten used to it. So the courts have up to now said, you know, that's, you can't stop them from putting an antenna up and renting it. That's not illegal. Now, there's some DVR capability that you can say, I want to record that show and watch it later. Again, the courts have said, well, that's, you know, there's a famous Cablevision case. That's just, you know, that they're just renting a DVR and an antenna. Well, the Supreme Court gets to rule on this. Well, this will be very interesting. The cable companies say, the television stations say, if this is ruled legal, if Aereo remains legal, if the Supreme Court says, hey, you're fine, you're cool, carry on, Barry Diller, then they're going to pull their stuff off broadcast. They'll only be available via cable. Oh, man, the amazing corporate greed. For years, they were very happy with, you know, ad-based free television. I don't understand. it's not enough money anymore. We want more money. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Naomi. Hi, Naomi.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Naomi.
Is there a game on today?
No. No. I'm taking off the Niners jacket, putting it aside. Just to pay attention to you.
Okay, the Broncos. Yeah, go Broncos. Anyway.
Hey.
I was wanting to know if I...
Are you wearing orange, Naomi, right now?
What?
Are you wearing orange right now?
No, not actually. I'm getting ready for the game, but I wanted to talk to you first.
We've got a few minutes, so good. Let's talk.
I hope you got my thank you card for all of the great things.
Oh, I did. This is you. That's nice. Thank you.
That's Santa, yes. Santa's going to give you a gold star by your name
by
Heather's name.
Yeah. You got the iFixit kit.
Yes.
I'm so glad you got that. Thank you, Heather, for making that happen. So what can I do for you this time around, Naomi?
Well, with this, I was trying to get a little bit more security, and I wanted to know if I could rename my modem.
Ah, I thought you wanted to change your name. Oh. You just want to change the modem then. That's good. Yes. You should. Okay, so when you get home with your Linksys, there's a few things you should do right away, and one of the first things is change the name, yes.
Well, because Excel put it in there, you know, it's like MyQuest.
Oh, that's fine. What you don't want is to leak information via the name on your wireless. I presume it's a wireless modem.
Yeah, it's a wireless.
Yeah, because that means you're brought. Oh, so it's wireless so people can see it. They can sit in the curb and see it. What you don't want to do is leak information. You don't want to have your last name, your street address. You don't want to have the brand name in there because that tells them how to attack it, right? Because there's certain attacks, for instance, on Linksys routers. So if they see Linksys in the name, they go, oh, yeah, I know how to attack that. Now, if you want to be cagey, you could name your non-Linksys router Linksys. That would be cool, but that just encourages them to try stuff. I name it after rock stars. You could name it after constellations, after desserts, whatever suits your fancy. But yes, I would rename it.
Now, my Ethernet, should I hook it directly to, is it secure to directly hook my desktops to the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, so all routers now have hard wiring. They have Ethernet ports as well as antennas for wireless. If you configure them properly, the wireless is just as secure as the hardwired, but it isn't as fast as the hardwired. So for best performance, like for a desktop computer or maybe your home theater setup, hook it up directly to the router.
Okay.
And that's wired, so that doesn't broadcast through the air. But since it's a wireless router, you're giving, in effect, access to your network to anybody who can see the wireless signal. So you do have to do things to lock it down.
Well, it's a modem and a wall.
Yeah. But as long as it's wireless and broadcasting, you got to lock it down.
Okay. So Ethernet.
Ethernet's safe. Ethernet, if you don't ever need the wireless, you can disable it in the setup of that wireless router. And I would do so because then somebody has to have physical access to your network to get into your network.
Okay, and then I want to rename my extender, or is that just...
Yeah, anytime you're broadcasting, if you're using Wi-Fi at all, here's what you have to do. Rename the router, that's one. Change the default login and password. Often it's just admin and no password, or admin.
Change that.
Yeah, change that. Turn off wireless access, WAN access to the setups. And I'm going to give you a couple more. We got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you want to talk high tech. I'd love to do it with you. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com. All the information I mentioned is there. In fact, I think Josh Windisch, he's the producer of the website. I think somewhere we probably have, and if we don't, we ought to have, just Leo's list of what to do to lock down your Wi-Fi router. We were talking with Naomi before the break. You know, she's got a Wi-Fi router. She says, does changing the name help? Yeah. So here's what helps and here's what doesn't help. There are lots of schemes out there for protecting wireless, including things like hiding the name. They call it SS. The name on the router, the name that's broadcast is the SSID. So hiding the SSID, some people think, makes it less prone to being attacked. It doesn't. But sometimes people do that. I don't recommend it. Another one that's even more onerous is called MAC address filtering. And you say only computers with a specific, every computer has a unique MAC address, it's called. Only computers with known MAC addresses, and they give you a list, are allowed on this network. Schools do this, businesses and so forth. They overlooked a little tiny thing, which is something called MAC address spoofing. All you have to do if you're a bad guy is sit on a wireless network for a while, capture a few MAC addresses, because, of course, that information has to be passed back and forth. Say, okay, I guess this MAC address is approved. And then you tell, all wireless cards can do this. You tell your wireless card, hey, I am now MAC address, and you give the address. And what that does is it bumps the other guy off, and you take over. So that's not effective. But fortunately, it is very easy to make your wireless network as secure as your wired network. So we started with the list, but I didn't finish. So the first thing to do, you get in there, is you change the name to something that doesn't announce what kind of router you're using. And probably shouldn't say your address. It probably shouldn't say your name. I use Rockstar's names, Harrison, what did I have? Morrison, Hendrix, Joplin, because if I see that, I immediately go, oh, yeah, that's one of mine. It's nice to have a convention like that. You could use random things if you want, but it just makes it easier to remember what they are. So pick something, you know, kinds of bread, video games, whatever you want. So, but do change that name. Don't leave it Linksys. Sometimes people in the chat room say, we changed it to FBI surveillance van. That's fine. You know, virus honeypot, whatever you want, as long as you can remember. Next thing to do, change the log on, the administrative log on and password. Because those are well known. So if I see that you're on a Linksys, because it's called Linksys 01432, then I'm going to try the default Linksys password of admin. And if you haven't, you know, because chances are if you haven't changed the name of the router, you probably haven't changed that password. And if you've left on something called WAN administration, it means I can literally log on to your router outside the network and change it. Yeah, you don't want to leave that open. Change the name, change the login, change the password. Doesn't have to be super secure password because people aren't going to sit there and try a whole bunch of them. But make it, you know, fairly lengthy. And don't make it like your street address or your zip code. Now, once you get in there and start configuring your router, the first thing is turn on encryption. This is really the most important thing you can do. There are a variety of forms of encryption. The old one is WEP. That's not preferred because it's crackable fairly quickly with some commonplace tools. So if you see that you have WPA, particularly if you have WPA2, use that. If you can use WPA2 with AES encryption, all the better. But WPA2 is the most important thing. So turn on that encryption. Now that means you're going to have to give it a password, and that the first time you use that router with any of your devices, you're going to have to enter that password. They'll remember it from then on, your computers, your laptops, your phones, all of that stuff. But you do have to do it the first time. And if somebody's visiting your house, you have to give them a password. But that's good because it means that the hacker who's sitting on the curb outside also has to have the password. Don't give it to them. So WPA2 encryption, turn it on, use a decent password. It shouldn't be monkey123, but, you know, something, it doesn't have to be super good, but just good. Long is better. Randomer is better. There are a couple of other settings you might want to turn off. There's debate over these. What I've just told you, everybody agrees. Do that. You don't have to worry about MAC address filtering, SSID hiding. Just turn on WPA2. There's no argument over that. Your neighbor can't use it. The hacker down the street can't use it. No argument about that. Little argument about the turn off WAN administration. There's no reason you'd want WAN administration. That means the ability to administer the router from outside the network. Since you've changed the password, it still requires that. But I would just turn that off. I would also turn off something called UPnP. That's a little dangerous because it means software inside the network, say a Trojan horse by a bad guy, can configure your router silently and without permission. It's used by Xbox and others. In fact, it was created by Microsoft for Xbox so that they could configure the game servers on the Xbox. But it's dangerous. So turn off UPnP, Universal Plug and Play, if your router has it. I think that covers it. Oh, there's a couple other things. WPS, that's that push button configuration thing. It turns out it's broken. Turn it off. Not all routers, unfortunately, honor this setting. They may have a setting that says disable WPS, which you should do, but it turns out many routers still do it. They ignore it, which is kind of sad. And then recently, there has been a hack that my friend Steve Gibson has publicized. That's a big one. And this affects, I think, Linksys routers only, but is something you should be aware of. And you can test for this with a simple address. The hack involves attacking your router through a particular port. 32.764. Turns out some routers, if a bad guy attacks through that port, will allow the bad guy to reconfigure the router at will. So what you want to do is test your router to see if it's vulnerable on port 32.764. I think it's mostly Linksys routers. So the test, and we'll put this, or is it Netgear? Netgear, sorry. The test, and we'll put this in the show notes, that Steve Gibson, my security friend, set up. It goes through his Shields Up. This is a great little way to see if your router is secure. But if you want to test that port specifically, bit.ly/port32764. Now, I know that's a lot to remember. So we'll just put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. bit.ly/port32764. What will happen is it will immediately test that port and tell you. What you want to see is a green light that says it's stealth. That means that port doesn't respond at all. The next best is closed. The Apple routers are closed. That's, I think that's fine. But Steve says you don't want to respond at all. Closed responds with the words, I'm closed, sorry. What you don't want to see is open. Then you're in trouble. And you may even want to get a new router if you do. But you can read up on that with Steve's website. So that's pretty much it. You notice that list has gotten longer. It used to be everything but the last two. But the last two are recent hacks of WPS and now this port 32764 that bad guys have been using to get into routers and modify them. Your router wants to protect you. Your router is a barrier to the outside world. It's a very good thing to have. But if it's especially if it's a wireless router, you want to configure it. Make sure that it's configured properly so that it is, in fact, protecting you. We'll put that list on the show notes, techguylabs.com. In fact, let's make this the tip of the week, Josh, so people can find it right on the front page. All right, we'll get back to the phones. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Right after this, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech. And if you have some additions to make, or you think otherwise when I talk about what to do to lock down your router, those are always welcome at our website, techguylabs.com. We put the show notes up there. So James DeRuvo is writing as I talk. James is putting it all on the website. Josh then breaks it up. He adds audio and video, and he breaks it up to question by question or segment by segment. So there will be a bit on the website that is Leo talks about securing the router. You can go in there and say, hey, I think you should do this, or what about this, or does this help? And that's a great place to have that discussion, and it's free, always available. I promise it will remain that way, and that's nice. I mean, we really want to build up a website that has lots of information, lots of answers. It's available to everybody, even people who don't listen to the show, but people who are just searching, how do I lock down my router? Yeah, this is important stuff. People need to know. Bran is on the line from Townsend, Mass. Hi, Bran. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Uh-oh. This happened yesterday. Okay. So what should I do? Should I put him on hold? Okay. Now you can pick him up. See if he's there. On line four? I don't know. We had this happen yesterday. All the calls that we had just disappeared. And then we had to start over again. It's technology. It just does. What? Yeah, he's gone. Okay. Let me see Chris in Buffalo, New York. See if I can talk to him. Chris, are you there? Yeah, it's happening again. This is why we thought yesterday I would have to do the rest of the show all by myself. It's something weird happens with this system. So what we're going to do is I guess if you've been on the line, and I'm really apologize, some of you have been on hold for a while.
You can take Lynn on line five.
I'll take Lynn on line five. Hi, Lynn.
Yes.
There we are. Hi, Lynn. Hi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you for taking my call. Now, I have a question about those little boxes called internet radios.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, those are. I'm trying to find information how they work. Now
I have a little box from Grace, which is one of the best, okay, on my bedside table. It's instead of a clock radio. It looks just like a clock radio. It has a clock on it, an alarm clock and everything. But instead of getting its radio stations through an antenna. It does have an antenna, but it gets it through Wi-Fi. So one of the things you have to have is internet access.
I have internet access. I don't use Wi-Fi, but I have access to Wi-Fi. What I'm interested in is like a portable type of internet radio, as well as what you just described.
Okay. And so obviously the basic requirement of any internet radio is internet connection. It can be wired, it can be wireless, and it can be over the cell phone network, 3G or 4G.
Okay.
So every smartphone is de facto an internet radio. You just need to put the application on there.
But I don't want a smartphone. That's a conscious decision.
Okay.
That is why I'm interested in this internet radio.
I don't know which internet radio you're talking about. You want one that you can walk around
with. Yeah, one I can walk around
with. You can walk around with.
Right.
You need, well, so you, if you don't want a smartphone, then you could get an iPod Touch. You need something that has, an iPod Touch will only work where there's Wi-Fi. So one of the things, in fact, the thing that makes a phone a smartphone is internet access.
Yes.
Well, so there you go. You need internet access for internet radio. You can get tablets that have internet access using Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, or Sprint. In fact, if you go to the carrier's stores, they'll have iPads, Galaxy tabs, a variety of different tablets, Android and iPhone.
No, I don't. You're not understanding. I do not want a smartphone. I don't want a smartphone at all. I have a phone, a Samsung Convoy.
No, I understand, but
you could get internet access. I'm wondering if that is the way. I don't really want it, though.
Okay,
I don't want a smartphone.
No, I understand, but you have to listen to me because what you need are two things:
okay,
internet access on this portable device and the ability to run radio applications. So that's either, it doesn't have to be a phone,
right?
But it is a smart device. It's a tablet or a phone that has internet access and can run apps. So that's why I'm mentioning these tablets. Yes, you get them at a smartphone, you know, at AT&T, for instance.
Okay.
But it's not a phone. It's a tablet. It's a tablet that has internet connectivity through the cell phone network. You see, there's not Wi-Fi everywhere, right?
Yeah, that was my call. That was why,
yeah,
I called. Yeah.
So you need, so the only place there's, you know, there is internet everywhere nowadays, thanks to cellular networks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're only going to go places where there's Wi-Fi, then you can use one, you know, anything that's just Wi-Fi. But if you're going to go in the car, for instance, drive down the road and you want, right, to get internet radio, is that what you want to do?
That's kind of the thing, like walking or whatever. Wherever I am, I'd like to be able to use, yeah, an internet radio, as, yeah, I would a smartphone. To me, from what I understand, is that you are able to get, you know, be in Europe, for instance, and you know, get a radio station that's in the Los Angeles area.
So, yeah, that's right.
I kind of want that universal access,
yeah,
aspect.
So, but what makes a smartphone? Three things make a smartphone: internet access, the ability to run applications, and a phone. You just, all you're saying is, I want the first two without the last.
Yeah.
So there are a number of companies that make portable internet radios that work with Wi-Fi, but you would need to have internet access somehow. So what you really want is something that can use 3G or 4G cell networks. They don't have to be a phone.
Okay.
I'm not sure what your opposition to a smartphone is.
I don't want... I don't like being pinged, and I don't.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
You know, I don't.
Okay, but so you do need it. But in order to do this, you do need an always connected internet device.
Okay.
So that would be a tablet. It would be one that has 3G or 4G. You would have to pay a monthly fee for that. Admittedly, at home you don't. You have Wi-Fi at home, so that's free. But as soon as you hit the road, you need internet access on the road. That means, again, a cellular network. So you're going to have to pay that. Usually it's $30 a month. And the nice thing is that you can, on a tablet, you can use a variety of applications. So, for instance, you can listen to this show on iHeartRadio, which is an application from the Clear Channel Radio folks. It has all the Clear Channel stations. It has music and so forth. There are pure internet radio applications. My favorite is TuneIn Radio Pro. That has a huge variety of stations, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. Many of the radio companies, besides Clear Channel, CBS, for instance, has an application. So these, and they're all free. So there's plenty of applications you can run, and then they'd use your always-on internet connection from the cell phone company to play internet radio. When you travel to Europe, oh, now it gets a little more complicated because you're roaming on the data network. You're no longer using AT&T's network. You're using Orange or O2 or, you know, Vodafone. You're using an international data network. International roaming is extraordinarily expensive. So either you have to arrange once you – if you're going to stay in Italy for 3 months, you would arrange with an Italian data company, a phone company, to have data there, and that would be relatively inexpensive, just as it is in the U.S. Starting, I think, this month or next month, all of the European Union will have a common roaming agreements. So any one country in there would give you access in every other country. Or you could arrange with your American carrier for a certain amount of international data, but that tends to be kind of expensive. So that's the bottom line. You need a device that can get internet radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, if you're going to get an internet radio, I need an internet radio, you might want to get rid of your smartphone or other device that's just burning a hole in your pocket. The place to go, Gazelle.com. Gazelle will buy many old gadgets, give you cash on the barrelhead, as they say. You can get money for your old iPhone. I wonder how far back they go on the iPhone. Looks like they go all the way back to the iPhone 3G. I have one of those lying around. Can't be worth much. 16 gigabyte AT&T iPhone 3G. We can't offer you anybody for this item, but they will recycle it. Now, if you have a more recent phone, let's say you have last generation iPhone 5 on AT&T, 32 gigabytes, $205. That's literally American dollars they'll give you for that phone. They'll even pay the shipping. Well, here's a nice feature of this site. You get 30 days to decide. So getting a quote does not obligate you to anything. Got an old BlackBerry you want to get rid of? Let's see. A Z10. In good condition, $65. Look, it's better than nothing, right? It's sitting in a drawer. If you have an old iPad, you want to get a new iPad, third generation iPad, want to upgrade to the new iPad, $175. Now, you've got 30 days to pull the trigger. So pile it up. Get all that stuff out of your drawers, your closet. They'll buy old Samsung tablets, Microsoft Surface, Google Nexus tabs. Ready for a new Nexus 10? Now, we think the new Nexus 10 is coming out, so this would be a perfect example. Get a quote on your old Nexus 10. That's locked in for 30 days. 30 days from now, you don't have to do anything if they don't come out with a new one, but if they do, you've got that price. And the thing is, as soon as they announce the new one, this price goes down, right? So get those prices locked in now. Once you decide to pull the trigger, they'll send you a box prepaid postage. And then they turn around very quickly. Their data experts will review it, make sure it's in the condition you said it was. And by the way, that can be beneficial. Sometimes, in fact, often I hear from people who say they increased the value they offer because they said it's in better condition than you said. It's in better condition than you said. Wow. How many companies do that? They'll also wipe your data if you forget to. That's a nice feature. Gazelle's paid now more than $100 million out to over 700,000 customers. This is a great company. They will pay shipping, then they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit, or if you like Amazon, this is a good deal. Amazon gift card, they'll bump it up 5%. Gazelle.com. Keep it moving. Get some cash for those old gadgets. Don't let them just gather dust. Gazelle.com. I'm Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. ChrisMarquardt.com. He joins us every week to talk about digital photography, do a little photo myth busting. I was just telling him. So a lot of the photographers I knew use Lightroom. You know, we tried to use Aperture, Apple's product, if you're on a Mac, but the problem is they haven't updated in years. And I'm starting to despair.
It feels a bit orphaned. And Lightroom, I've been using this for forever, pretty much since it came out in 2007. I used one of the first betas, and I've been sticking with it.
And in 7 years, they've updated it 5 times. We're version 5. They update it all the time, but they're 5 major revisions. It's just a great program. I know you teach Lightroom. What is this course you're doing here?
Well, I teach Lightroom. I do real workshops, but then at one point I thought there are not enough people who can get to the workshop, so I'd have to do a video workshop. And I've just released it. It's at you can find it at discoverlightroom.com.
23 lessons. Wow.
It's 23 lessons. It's 6.5 hours of DRM-free video, so it works on pretty much any device. There's actually over half an hour of free content there, so on the website, check it out. See if you like it, and you get to choose your own price. So we have made this as easy as possible for people.
You're going to just say, pay whatever you feel like?
Well, we have four price levels, you know, like the camera phone shooter who does just want to organize a bit of their photos gets it for $14.99, and the point and shooter will pay a bit more, or someone that's with a great DSLR. It's pretty much your choice. You get the same content all price levels,
oh, that's
but
nice
it's
of you.
Kind of one of those things, you know, it's like if you are a pro, maybe you want to pay a bit more because you really make money with photography.
It's
but
very,
others
this
might
is a
not.
Very modern thing to do. Pay what you wish. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, again, 6.5 hours of video. Works on pretty much anything on Android, on iOS. We are working on an iPad app, so right. You will even be able to download it to an iPad app.
For me, having Lightroom is great. And so I broke down because Adobe's gone to the Creative Cloud, where it's basically you can't buy software. You have to subscribe to it. But they offered a deal. I don't know why I got offered this deal. Maybe because I used to, because I've purchased copies of Lightroom before. But it was, well, I think, $10 a month for Lightroom and Photoshop. And that's kind of the ideal combination.
They offered this for to people who had an old version of the Creative Suite and something.
I think so, yeah.
Along those lines. But then for a short time, they also offered it to pretty much everyone. So they just wanted to get lots of people.
So I figure $120 a year, that's probably what I was paying on Lightroom. And, you know, Photoshop is $800. Lightroom is only around $120 or something. They dropped the price.
Yeah.
But I figured that's probably worth it. And it's nice to have Photoshop. Lightroom does most of what you want to do in terms of going through your photos, picking it, tuning them up. But sometimes you want to stitch together a panorama, or you want to do something more advanced, erase, you know, an ex-girlfriend. Then Photoshop is really...
Lightroom is pretty good doing that, too.
Oh, really?
Yes,
is there an old girlfriend filter on Lightroom? I have to find that.
Sort of, yeah. You can clone things out. No, but Lightroom does way more. You have to, the entire workflow is pretty much in Lightroom. So it's a hub. You import things in there. You organize things. You can sort them and find your images later by all sorts of metadata, and you export them and you read them out and make them look pretty. So you have all the filters and everything you need. And it's just this one-stop shop that has become the pretty much the important thing for me.
Photo myth-busting time.
Yes, it is. Light, last week, remember we briefly talked about CFLs and LEDs and things, and I just a topic that never really leaves me, because good colors are so important in photography. And yes, you can tweak the white balance on raw photos. You can pull the slider back and forth in whatever program you use, even Lightroom. But there's still a big difference between different artificial light sources. And I just wanted to briefly talk about that, because it is one of those things that sometimes you can't get the colors just right. And it's so hard to understand why that sometimes happens. So a big difference between the incandescent bulbs that we used to have and that are now kind of on the way out, and LEDs and CFLs is the spectrum of the light. And if you know the spectrum, red, orange, yellow, Roy G. Biv, right? So it starts somewhere in the red and the warm. And
that brings me back to preschool. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Roy G. Biv, the colors of the
exactly.
rainbow.
Exactly, and that's what our eyes see. And nothing, I mean, on the violet
do
side.
Do they do that in Germany too, Roy G. Biv? No, they don't.
No, not really. I learned this in English, actually.
I think you must have. How do you, what is the mnemonic for the colors of the rainbow in German preschools? Kindergarten.
There is none as far as I know, no.
There's no rainbow. There is only...
No, we have rainbows. But
okay.
Anyway, so that spectrum, if you look at a rainbow, it's kind of a continuous thing, right? There are no holes in there. There is red that goes into orange that then goes into yellow, green, and so on. So that's what we call a continuous spectrum. And daylight obviously has that. Daylight is pretty much the best quality of light that you can get. That's kind of our baseline. And then actually, you'd be surprised if you look at the different light sources. The incandescent lights also have a very complete spectrum, even though they have like a bulge on the red side, so red is much, much stronger, but they are also very continuous, which is why when you shoot under incandescent light, it is fairly simple to correct for that in white balance. The problem with CFLs and LEDs, and they're really working hard on that, especially the LED guys, is that the spectrum is not really complete. I have a little picture. If you go to tfttf.com/spc, you can see a few photos of light spectra. And non-continuous spectrum can be a bit of a problem. So digital cameras might have an issue if you have a light source that just has a few peaks in that spectrum. But the most important thing still is do good white balance. You get some of those colors that those CFLs give you and some LEDs give you. You can get some of those colors into a bit of a nicer looking thing. But if you get weird colors under these light sources, you shouldn't be surprised, because digital cameras just sometimes have a bit of an issue with them. They're working on it. It's getting better.
It's interesting to see this this chart you did, because it does look like incandescents are the best in terms of
Almost on par with daylight. It's you know what you do when you do white balance? All you do is you kind of shift the spectrum sideways. And the problem is, if you don't have a continuous spectrum, you are shifting a few peaks from left to right. And
so like CFL has these big peaks in the green and
the
red.
Huge peaks.
Yeah.
So and holes in between the peaks.
And
holes.
Yeah, it's not consistent. Who knew that? I mean, it looks to the eye. The eye smooths everything out. But
now the eyes are okay with that usually. You don't need a complete spectrum to see all the colors. There's something that's called metamerism, which is a very scientific thing, but basically you can kind of see colors that are not actually there by mixing other colors and things. But the digital cameras see things differently than our eyes. So even if it looks perfect to the eye, the digital camera might get the colors slightly off. Hollywood doesn't like that at all, so they have to do shooting tests with new light sources and things, because they shoot more digital and they have more LEDs and things.
I wonder if it's easier now that they shoot digital than it was when they were shooting film.
Well, it's definitely quicker to get a preview, but it is still a test that they didn't really have to do before, because they could trust their eyes under incandescent light, and now with LEDs and things, it's getting harder to do that, but they're working on it. I think we're pretty close.
I wonder, I mean, I'm trying to think, I guess television still uses, they're very hot, the old incandescent lights or the arc lights, which have smooth spectrum.
They're mainly switching to fluorescence now, though, because
fluorescents are cooler. We're using here in the studio, I have a big fluorescent softbox, and then I have highlights and fill lights that are LED. I don't know how we're white balancing those, because that's crazy.
Oh, it's looking really good.
It looks good.
But it probably took some experimenting and
we have a gaffer. You need a gaffer.
Yeah,
that's what they call
and a great card.
That's what they call the lighting guy, the gaffer. He comes in. Ryan Marsh, our gaffer. Chris Marquardt, head out to discoverlightroom.com. Pick up your workshop. Always a great pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you want to participate in our photo adventure, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, does this every month. We give you an assignment to go out, take pictures. Doesn't matter. The camera does not matter. Use your camera phone, whatever you want. But we want you to illustrate or elucidate or in some way exacerbate the word departure. So that's the word. You decide what that means. But to take a picture that fits that description, departure, and upload it to our Flickr group, flickr.com. It's the Tech Guy group. Do make sure you put the tag departure in there, so that Renee Silverman, our moderator, will know, oh, yes, that's a contest entry. And then in a few weeks, once a month we do this, Chris will look at all the images and pick three to talk about because of their photographic interest. It's fun. No prize. It's not a contest. Not a competition. Just for fun. Departure is the word of the month. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Brian is on the line. Townsend, Mass. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Lou. How you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
Great. I've got my original question and a really quick one about setting up wireless networks.
Okie dokie.
Do the wireless networks one really quickly. If you're using different SSIDs, like Rockstar names, doesn't it make it so you can't roam within your house?
Oh, no. I don't use different names within one place.
Oh, okay.
No. I have one name. But different, different houses or, when basically it's always the same name. I think my current name, I can't even remember. I think it's Hendrix, but I can't remember. I generally choose departed rock stars. So I had Morrison, Joplin, Hendrix, my current one is Winehouse, in honor of Amy Winehouse. So that way I know when I see that, I go, oh, yeah, that's mine. And that way it doesn't say, the street address or my last name. I don't want people to get any information out of the name of the Wi-Fi router.
But in order to roam, you do have to have the same SSID for all the access points.
Yeah, well, I don't really roam one access point. If I have to extend it as I do, it's all the same name using an extender rather than an additional access point. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I walk around my house with my S3 on my hip, I want to be able to have it not, lose connection when I go from one side to the other.
It should all be the same network. Maybe you have extenders, but it should all be one massive network.
Cool.
With a single name, you're exactly right. Although, you see, your S3, your phone, is smart enough that if it loses a signal from one router, it'll go to another, the one that it knows. So you could have multiple names.
Cool.
But you'd have a handoff. Yeah.
My main question about the Samsung Galaxy S3.
Yes.
I've got it on Verizon, and it was running beautifully. And then they gave me an over-the-air update, which brought it up to version 4.3.
Yeah.
And now it's slow, and if I power it on, it takes about 4 seconds to start. So I have a blank screen.
So there are a couple of things you could do. It may be that it's because it's an older, not much older, it's a year old. But it's, and then, by the way, I think the best Galaxy they made was the S3. But, of course, you know, the S5 is coming out in a couple of months. I mean, so it may be that it's just not fast enough for 4.3. That seems unlikely. More likely, you just had a bad upgrade. So I hate to say it, but the first thing I'd try is a factory reset.
Okay. Now, doesn't that still keep it at 4.3 with a factory reset?
Yes, and that's okay because I think 4.3 is fine. But if you continue to have problems and it's a clean install and a factory reset, then maybe not. But I think it's much more likely that it's not 4.3, that it's just a bad upgrade. That happens. You know, it's an operating system.
Right.
It's just like a computer. You can have bad upgrades to Windows, too, and then you get problems. So I would try a factory reset first. And then, if not, you can downgrade.
That's what I was wondering about.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how to do it. It may involve rooting the phone and downloading a 4.2. What did it come with? 4.2.2? I can't even remember.
Yep.
Download of you know, a stock. What you want, and this is the key, is a stock 4.2.2. The S3 is very rootable, very hackable, and there are lots of things you can do with it. I would go to xd-developers.com.
It's XDA, isn't it?
XDA. Sorry, you're right. You know better. XDA developers, because that's where, you know, you look up the S3, you look up the Verizon S3, and they'll tell you all the things you can do with it. And it might be this at this point, you'd be better off using a third-party ROM than the official ROM.
Gotcha. Was it Cyanogen that gets used quite a bit?
Cyanogen is the most popular. CM11 would be the one you would want.
Okay.
And that, but there are all, there. There's sometimes issues like, oh, the camera doesn't work right or the GPS doesn't work right. So you want to read all the descriptions and stuff. First thing I would do is a factory reset. Next thing I would do is root it and put Cyanogen on it and see how that works. There are other choices. We have people in the chat room, many of them, who say, you know, I have 4.3 on my S3 and not a problem. So my suspicion is just a bad update.
All right.
These things happen. Hey, great to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. We'll put the link to XDA Developers in the chat room. It's xda-developers.com. And it is really the site to go to if you have an Android phone and you want to hack it. You want to go and do something interesting. Not illegal, not even wrong. It's your phone. You get to mess with it. And I think in a lot of cases, it's a good thing to do. Andrew in Bettendorf, Iowa. Hi, Andrew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I was calling because of the recent ruling on net neutrality for the FCC.
Yeah.
And apparently, from what I understand, the ruling said that Internet providers are now allowed to block or slow down websites. They just have to report that they're doing that.
I think there was a little bit of a gloom and doom reporting on this. I'm not as gloomy about it. In my opinion, what the appeals court told the FCC already knew. You do not have jurisdiction. In fact, in the decision, the judge who wrote the decision said, we understand it is very important for the success and the continued innovation of the Internet that it not that this kind of thing not happen. But we have to say, from a purely legal point of view, the FCC has not established jurisdiction. You know, the FCC has jurisdiction over phone companies, has jurisdiction over radio stations. It doesn't have jurisdiction, for instance, over podcasts. So if the FCC decided to sue a podcast for using the 7 bad words, the court would say, you're right, they shouldn't use the 7 bad words, but you can't stop them because you don't have jurisdiction. That's in effect what happened. The FCC has jurisdiction over something called common carriers. A phone company is a common carrier. They have, for some reason, decided not to declare broadband providers common carriers. Now, there are probably political implications. I'm not sure why not. But the court simply said, because you haven't declared broadband common carrier, you don't have jurisdiction here. Now, I believe that we're going to have to fight for this. Is they call it net neutrality. It's a terrible word. What I really think the way to say is we're against discrimination on the internet. We don't want to have to pay extra to get Verizon to bring you the bits or AT&T or Comcast. Here's an example. AT&T is doing this sponsored data thing where if you pay them money, they won't. Their customers won't have to use up bandwidth to get it. So Netflix might go to AT&T and say, here's, you know, $10 a customer a month. Now the customer doesn't have to pay for the bandwidth. But that is discriminate. It's great for Netflix discriminating against YouTube if they don't pay. Because the customer does have to pay for YouTube, but not for Netflix. Suddenly it's an unequal balanced, unbalanced playing field. That's going to kill the free and open flow of information on the internet. And I think the court said this is important. But we cannot, in good conscience, say that you have jurisdiction when you don't. So I wouldn't global. I don't think this is the end of the world. I think we do have to write to Congress and say, look, we need a free and open internet. This is good for America. You got to enforce this. Or perhaps go to the FCC and say, declare these guys common carriers. The fight is not over, and we got to keep fighting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour number three of the Tech Guy Show, where we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and smartphones, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere. Chris is in Buffalo, New York, our next caller. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I just wanted to mention the partnership between Microsoft and GW Micro that offers Windowized screen reader for free for any Office users. Office does not have to be running in order for the screen reader to work. The screen reader is totally fully functional and free.
Isn't that great? Now, GW Micro, which screen reader do they make? Is it Windowized? Is that what it's called?
It is Windowized, and the website actually is windowizeforoffice.com.
Windowizeforoffice.com. Yeah, this is really, we reported this on our Windows Weekly show, and I forgot to mention on the radio show, so I'm really glad. Normally, these are very expensive programs because they're very specialized programs. Is it the number for window? Oh, window.
It's for Windowized, as in EYES. foroffice.com.
Okay, I'm just misspelled it. These are normally fairly expensive programs, and kudos for Microsoft. What I didn't know is you have to have Office, but you don't have to be running Office. It'll work throughout Windows once you have
it. Correct. As long as Office is installed on the machine, Office 2010 or 2013, Windowized will work. If it's not installed on the machine, then it becomes a 30-minute demo.
Got it. How much is Windowized normally?
It's $895.
$895.
Correct.
Yeah, so this is a very good deal. I don't know if Microsoft subsidized it, if it was GW Micro's idea, but whoever did this, kudos. This is really great. It's fully functional. It is free. And Microsoft Office is fairly inexpensive. You get Office, the monthly subscription, I think it's $13 a month. You're really getting a deal. So if you know somebody who is blind or has vision impaired, this would be something to absolutely get. It is not Windows RT, of course. It requires Windows Professional, and it does work up through 8.1. So XP, Vista, 7, 8, or 8.1. Hey, thanks for reminding me to talk about that, Chris. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I called you before and told you how to turn off TalkBack.
That was driving me nuts. Thank you. I owe you twice.
You're welcome.
I owe you twice. Thank you so
much.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. That phone ringing is Johnny Jett calling, so we'll get Johnny on the line. I don't know. You want to get him on now? If he's ready to go now, I can go now with him.
Sure.
Yeah? All right, let me pick him up. Hey, Johnny, how are you?
How you doing, Leo?
Johnny Jett is our travel guru at johnnyjett.com. Couldn't make it yesterday. Were you in transit?
No, I was speaking at the LA Times Travel Show like I was today, too, but I just got sucked
in. Awesome?
My phone was not working.
What do you talk about at the LA Times Travel Show?
Well, I talk about how to get the best travel deals, you know, for airlines, hotels, car rental.
Anybody there know you from the radio?
Actually, I was shocked. I mean, I literally had at least 20 people come up to me and say, I listen to you all the time on Twit and Leo Laporte. And they just say, you know, such nice things about you and me. I'm like, oh, my God, thank you.
That's so great. You can go to johnnyjet.com to get his travel insights. And every week he comes on and tells us how to save money using technology. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I actually just walked across the street. I'm at the JW Marriott, which is across the street from the LA Convention Center, which is where I just got done speaking. And the people are still speaking today, including Henry Rollins. You know him?
I love him. What does he have to say about travel, though? He's kind of a beat poet and rock star.
Oh, my God. The guy travels. He's been to 81 countries. I was just passing by. I said, hey, Henry, we talked. Literally, I had to end the conversation. The guy talked for 45 minutes. I go, man, I might be late for my talk.
He does a lot of stuff. He is a talker. I know he does some radio stuff, too. So that's awesome.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. And Adam Richman, who's from the Travel Channel, is also speaking. He just came by. And, you know, these guys are all really nice people, and they're all trying to teach people to get out, see the world, because, you know, if more people traveled, honestly, the world would be a better place. And that's one of my goals, trying to get people to get out. I used to be afraid to fly, afraid to leave the house, afraid to leave the country. I got over it, and I'm just trying to show people now how to do it for cheap.
That's neat. That's really great.
And speaking of cheap, by the way, at this show, I was walking the trade show floor, Singapore Airlines Vacations was there. They have a deal from L.A. and San Francisco to Bali for 5 nights, including air, for $1,599. That's $1,600. That includes transfers and your hotel and breakfast. I mean, that's an incredible deal.
I've always wanted to fly Singapore Air. Many people say it's the best of the airlines.
It is. Yeah. I mean, wow. In most people's regards, it's definitely the top three.
Do I go to SingaporeAir.com to get that deal? Where do I get that deal?
I think you can find it there. I just saw the flyer walking by their booth, but I know they also have a Singapore Airlines Vacations.
Is it safe? Do you worry? I mean, remember Bali, there was a nightclub bombing and stuff like that. Do you worry about that kind of stuff, or you just go?
No, I don't worry. I mean, you always got to keep your wits about yourself. I was in Bali last year for my honeymoon. And again, you know, they're going to hit the real touristy places. Those are the nightclubs. So I have a feeling that if you're going to be going to Bali, you wouldn't be going to the nightclubs. But it's places like that. Also, you know, if you're going to Thailand, everyone's afraid to go to Thailand right now because there's all these demonstrations. Thailand is safe, especially outside of Bangkok. But even in Bangkok, you just got to go away from where all the demonstrators are. You never want to go to where demonstrators are.
And I always pay attention to the State Department travel advisories, things like that, just to make sure that you're not going somewhere dangerous. But
sure.
Some of the fun of travel is being adventurous. It was certainly an adventure to go to Cairo a few years ago, and I'll never forget it. And we got to see the pyramids, and it was incredible.
Boy, for sure. But I mean, you don't want to do anything stupid, though.
I probably wouldn't go there today.
I wouldn't go to Cairo right now.
Not right now. Wait till it settles down a little bit. You know, don't be crazy. But there are so many great places.
It's time to go to Bangkok because the hotels are all big time on sale because all these foreigners are afraid. Even though Thailand's a relatively big country, and even Bangkok is a big city. Just stay away from the demonstrators, and you'll have no problem. And you'll get great discounts, and you won't have to fight for a pool chair, and people will be nicer to you, although they're so nice there anyway.
Now, in Thailand, a lot of people go to the beaches, right?
Well, for sure. They go down south.
Down south. Have you been there?
Yeah, of course. Last time I was there, it was 2 years ago, I went to Khao Son Lok, which is where they had the big tsunami. It was actually the hardest hit area.
That's right.
And the people are so nice, and we were staying at a really nice hotel, and Natalie ordered pad thai at the pool. And I'm like, man, you know what it's going to cost me? Why don't we just go out to a restaurant nearby? She's like, don't worry about it. So I got the bill. It was $7.40 for the pad thai at the pool. And then we walked to the restaurant around the corner. It was $1.40.
See, you overpaid.
Dude, but $7, I can afford that. I
agree with you that it's nice to go somewhere where they're glad to see you and they're grateful for your business. And sometimes you go to the big tourist places. They're not so happy. It's like you're annoying them. So I'm not going to name names, but it's nice to go a little bit off the beaten path where they're really glad to have you and you can have such a wonderful experience. And part of travel is meeting the people And so when they're happy to see you, they're not overwhelmed by tourists. It's so much more fun.
Without a doubt. And that's usually the best part. I was in Kauai 2 weeks ago, and we went to a restaurant, and the woman, you know, she was probably the rudest woman I'd ever come across in my travel. I went home and wrote a post. Wow, I'll never go to the wake-up cafe or whatever it's called.
That's sad. And that's just because they're overwhelmed with tourists. They're not grateful for your being there. They don't want you there. Go home. And they have that attitude. And so I'll go somewhere where they want maybe. Hey, if you want to go somewhere where you're wanted and welcome and can learn so much, JohnnyJet.com or follow him on Twitter at JohnnyJet. We'll talk again next week. Have a great time, Johnny.
Thank you. Take care.
Safe travels. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back we go to the phones and Jim in Austin, Texas. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. I'm a computer geek who's a little bit older than you. I've had a computer since 76 in my house.
And what was that computer in 1976?
Well, there was one from this hippie-looking guy that was a single-board computer. I couldn't afford an Altair, and this hippie-looking guy said he was just going to give all the software away. I didn't buy an Apple One. It would be worth God knows what now.
No kidding. It would be worthwhile. So your first computer was an Apple One.
No, almost. I came real close, but I bought one from another single board computer called from Digital Group, which was going to offer commercial software and promptly failed.
Yeah.
These were the days. I did pay the same price as your Mac Pro for my Apple SE.
Well, that's why to old timers like us, the fact that the Mac Pro is $3,000 is not so intimidating. For years, the computer you wanted was always $2,500. And my first Mac was $2,500, so $3,000 didn't seem that bad. Although compared to computers today, it's a little high.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could almost buy a new car for that almost. But anyway, I am very blessed to have a self-employed wife who has a good sized income tax practice, and they've got a lot of computers in there. And hers is she's an old school girl, and she keeps a lot of stuff. Computer. I do use Carbonite, and it saved our rear end several times.
Good man. Love hearing that.
I want to back up. I want something that will just clone the disk.
Right.
What are these disk cloning programs, and they've got checkbox hell. You know, they've got all these checkboxes that it will. These things will do. I only want the one checkbox. All I want it to do is start cloning the drive, cloning that up.
Let me give you. So I have a few recommendations, and let me first explain to people what is going on here. Are you on a Mac or a PC?
We're talking about PCs.
PCs, a Windows machine. All right. Because on the Mac, there's a super duper really great. It's all you need to know. On the PC, there's some good choices for you. And I trust my friend Steve Gibson, the creator of SpinRite. He's kind of a hard drive guru. For years, he recommended, and I used a paid program from Germany. Very simple. It's what you want. In other words, it doesn't, you know, it just clones the drive. It's called Drive Snapshot at drivesnapshot.de, but it's not free. Steve currently recommends a free program from runtime.org called Drive Image XML. That's free. Commercials you got to pay for, but the private edition, that is for personal use, is free. The nice thing about these is they will both work within Windows. So a lot of the older stuff like Norton Ghost, you had to exit Windows to do the image. And that's the case with this CloneZilla, which is a free Linux-based system. You boot into the Linux operating system on a CD and run CloneZilla. This is also free and open source. So those are three very good choices. Let me explain what he's doing, though, folks. He wants to basically take a kind of freeze-dried image of the drive exactly as it is at this moment. Everything. Operating system, cache, swap drive, everything. Put it in a single file. The advantage of doing that is to get back to that point is very quick and easy. You just run the cloning software and restore the image, and it blasts it on there, and it's just a few minutes instead of running a full Windows install and installing all your apps and stuff. It's not a great backup choice. It's part of a backup strategy. The reason is, after you do this clone, of course, you're going to then change things and add files and add programs, and the clone won't have any of that stuff. So you'd have to do clones regularly. Probably not the best way to back up. So what I do, and I do use cloning, is when I build a new operating system, I'll clone it. I did this with my new Mac Pro. I cloned it. So now I have a bootable disk that has everything all set up, all the updates, all the apps that I use. So when I need to get back to square one, I can do it very quickly. And then from that point on, you want to continue to use Carbonite or something else to back up the data.
Well, thank you, Leo. I don't mind paying either, but we back up the data the way you, I think you want. We have Carbonite and a local backup server that
Perfect.
We back up data
Perfect.
To.
And I think like, for a full strategy, having a drive snapshot is also a very good thing because you can it gets you back up and running fast.
Well, she's got a lot of custom software on there, and to reinstall all of that and get it configured exactly like it was, it's a nightmare. So, okay, you've been...
This is the one I've used for years, and I really like it. It's not free. Drive Snapshot. I'm not sure why Steve switched over to Disk Image. It is free, but I haven't used it, but if Gibson says it's good, it's good.
Okay, Drive Snapshot, and I remember a time when you were not helpful to me.
When was that? When was I not helpful?
I say I can't remember.
Oh, you can't remember. Oh, good. Thank goodness.
You've been on several radio shows and been around as long as I can remember. And no matter how smart I think I am, I always learn something. So thank you very much.
Well, I learned from you guys, too. So thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. One of the reasons I can do this show is because of people like you. And thank you. I'm very grateful. This is hardly working for a living. Carlo, Ontario, Canada. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey. I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. I'm a photographer, and I want to display my images. And what I set up is a digital picture frame, but the way I did it was I used a Western Digital Media Player, and I connected it to a monitor.
Very cool. So you get a big size. So you're saying you want to have a photo frame in your house or your office where your pictures are constantly on display.
Yeah.
Great way to do it.
But the thing is, I'm having issues in the picture quality.
Yeah.
It's not as clear and crisp as I expect from an HD display.
Yeah.
Now, I'm wondering if maybe it's the setup I have.
It's very likely that you have, I'm thinking, JPEGs on the drive that maybe when you blow them up that big, you see more of the artifacts. Is that possible?
Yep. That is the distortion I'm seeing.
Yeah. So make higher quality images, export higher quality images.
But the thing is, my JPEGs, they're 36 megapixels. And
it's not the megapixels, it's the file size. So JPEG is what we call a lossy compression technology. That means they, in theory, just like MP3, they take little bits out that you won't notice. And so they can make the file much smaller. If you do lossless compression, and TIFF, for instance, is a lossless compression file format, then every dot that is on the original image will appear on the screen. But when you use JPEG, a lossy image compression, a lot of that data is taken out and lost. Now, so it's not about the number of dots per inch. That is not the measure. It's the quality of the JPEG. And you'll see when you export your JPEGs, there's a slider that goes everywhere from 0 to 100 in terms of quality. Turn it all the way up. Make the file size as big as possible. For one thing, you've got a big old hard drive. I doubt you have more images than you could fit on that Western Digital. And then they won't be compressed as much. It's going to be the same number of megapixels. It's how much compression is applied.
Because I did try with the TIFF files.
And how did TIFF look?
It looked jaggedy.
Oh, that's not good. So make sure that, you know, TIFF can also get to a lower resolution. So whatever program you're using to export your files, look at your settings on the export and make sure it's as big as possible and as much detail as possible. That's where you'll get the best quality. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, we were talking to Carlo, who is a photographer. This is a lot of people want to do this. He wants to display his pictures. So he got a Western Digital, one of those Western Digital WD Live devices that you hook up to a TV. I presume you're using HDMI. But he says the pictures don't look great. So there are so many things that can go wrong. First of all, remember the 50-inch monitor, whatever you're displaying, a television screen is not as good quality as a computer monitor. So it's likely that television screen is at best 1,080 dots from top to bottom. That's lower than a computer screen, almost any computer screen. And so it may be that in order to get the image that's on the drive in much higher quality, you said 36 megapixels, it's got to get it down to, 2 megapixels. it may be that the WD is not downsampling it very well. So you might actually get better results. I have to amend what I told you. If you export the file size to match the resolution of the screen and use your software to downsample it, it may actually give you a better result. So once again, to explain that this monitor has to have a certain resolution, lower than the 36 megapixel images that you have on that drive. So in order to do that, the Western Digital device has to down convert the images to a lower quality. If it's not doing a good job, you're going to see lousy images. A couple of other things, couple better things you could do. One is you could use a real computer monitor, higher resolution monitor, or do the downsampling for the WD, export that file. See, I said the wrong thing. I said to export it in higher quality. In fact, export it in the resolution it's going to be on that monitor. And if you're using Lightroom or Photoshop or a good program like that, it's going to do the best possible job of resizing that image. That's the issue, is the resizing of the images. It's actually an interesting question. I had to think about it a little bit before I came up with the right answer. Hope that helps, Carlo. John in Haynesville, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Mr. Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a very important question. I know how much you like to spend other people's money.
I do.
But it's a matter of spend it now or spend it later.
Okay.
I have a Verizon 4S iPhone, and my contract is coming up, so I can get a new one next month. Okay. Or should I wait for the iPhone 6? And if I do that, should I pay full freight and get my unlimited data, or should I just subsidize it and say deal with it?
So that's a fascinating two-parter. So the first question is a very common computer tech question: buy now or wait? And of course, you buy now, you have the advantage, you get it now, but wait, you're going to get something better. Now, the wait in this case is till the next iPhone comes out. Is that September? Probably. You're talking 9 months. So that's a long wait.
Yeah.
And we don't know what the iPhone 6 will have. But remember that we're in a TikTok cycle with Apple. So the 5 and the 5S, that's a product category. The 6 will be a big step up. So expect a bigger jump between the 5S and the 6 than between the 5 and 5S. Now, you're on a 4S, so it's going to be a big jump anyway from the 4S to the 5S. If you can wait 9 months, you're going to get a better phone. How much better? I don't know. Because remember, Apple is kind of running out of things they can do.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, the only thing I really would like them to do with the iPhone, it's already got a great camera. The operating system's not going to change because Apple doesn't change operating systems that often. So it's going to be iOS. The only thing really that they could do with that phone is make a bigger screen, in my opinion. I would like to see a bigger screen because, Apple's kind of been left in the dust in that regard. If you think the 4S screen is big enough, then that's not an issue for you. So I guess the real question should be, do I wait 9 months for a bigger screen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, this,
I was thinking, and I also like to be that person that has the latest and greatest too. So that's also weighing heavily on my mind.
Right. And then you're asking about a thing that's unique to Verizon. Verizon has unlimited data plans. If you get a new phone, the only way, and this really frosts my chaff, the only way you're gonna keep your unlimited data plan is if you don't pay the subsidized price, but you pay the full freight, which in the case of the iPhone, we're talking about $700. Instead of $200, $700. I would do the math. I would also watch carefully your data consumption. It may be, in fact, you don't need unlimited data.
Yeah, I go through about I barely hit the 2 gig mark. And yeah.
Then unlimited is not doing you any favors. You're going to get two on the basic plan anyway.
Yeah, I can keep my current rate that I'm at right now and get a 6 gig plan.
Right.
For $30.
That's so effectively unlimited. You know.
And yeah.
Even unlimited, when these carriers talk about it, is technically unlimited, but you get throttled after 5 gigabytes. A month, and that means you're going to be so slow you're going to wish you had limited data. It's like, I can't use this. So I think get the subsidized price. I don't think unlimited data is worth it. You told me you're using 2 gigabytes, but that's not much. You don't need unlimited. If you told me I'm using 10 gigabytes a month, then that's different. But 2 gigabytes, nah. So the question of waiting.
That much.
Yeah, because you're on Wi-Fi a lot. Most people are. I'm at home and at work. I got Wi-Fi. The only time I ever use a data plan is when I'm in between, and that's not that much. If you had a long commute or you like to listen to internet radio on the train or something like that, you might be higher.
I just download it and listen to your program.
So there you go. There you go.
I contribute to your 950 terabyte bill every month.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Believe it or not, I thank you for that. So, but the, as for whether to wait, that's always, you know, there's no definite answer to that. It's trying to understand what you're waiting for, which is sometimes hard with Apple because they don't really tell you what the next version is going to be. In my opinion, it won't be anything dramatic. If mm-hmm. anything, it'll be a bigger screen. They can't get higher res. The screen's already excellent. The camera's already excellent. I guess they could make it a little bit higher resolution, but I doubt it. I don't see anything major coming along the road for the 6.
Yeah, and the 4S screen is fine for me. So yeah. Just
you'd get, when you go to a 5S, you'd get an extra row of icons. It is a taller screen than the old 4. And you get the fingerprint reader, which is, you know, interesting. You know, it's a to me, if you can wait on a smartphone, because the stuff's advancing so fast with smartphones, and it's not so much with Apple, but on the Android side. And I know you love your iPhone, but I would keep that iPhone if it's working for you, and watch what's happening everywhere, not just on the Apple side, because you may see something you really like. The Galaxy Note 3 with its 5.7 inch screen. I mean, that thing is huge. And for some people, with a stylus, that's a great thing. Some people, that's ridiculous. So you just
I fall square. I may have a friend who has a Note 3, and I just look at it and like,
are you nuts?
I could get an iPad Mini.
I know.
It would be the same.
Giant. I'm a big fan of the Moto X because I can talk to it. Something you can sort of do with the iPhone, but not exactly. So on and on and on. I mean, this is such a personal decision. You know, you're waiting at least 9 months. 8 months now, I guess. You know that there isn't a lot Apple can do because they don't update the operating system that often. I just don't see an iPhone 6 being dramatically different. I think Apple and everybody at this point has got it's a mature industry. There's not a lot of stuff they can do to make it different. You already got the best camera in the world. I guess that's one area Apple might conceivably upgrade. Thanks. Good questions. A couple of them. Thank you, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Steve. I'm sorry, not Steve. Steve's coming up. John in Kenwick, Washington. You're next. Hi, John.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I was having problems watching some of your episodes. When I'm streaming some of your episodes, it will either be choppy, like it'll play for good for a while, and then it will stop, and then it will. And sometimes it will skip,
We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about streaming video problems thereof. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the weekend, John and Kenwick was saying he has trouble streaming our show. I don't want to make it just about our show. We do make audio and video of our show available on the internet, both this show and all the podcasts. We do about 30 podcasts every week on the Twit Network at twit.tv. If you go to twit.tv, you'll see we have several different providers, Ustream, Justin.tv, and BitGravity. And often just switching around will make things better. But if it doesn't, if you get, and this is what happens with streaming video. In fact, it's kind of fascinating to me that we've gotten to the point now where we expect internet video to be as good as television, because what we're doing is kind of mind-boggling. Internet video is, high-quality video is a lot of data. You remember in the early days of internet audio, this would happen. You'd get what's called buffering. You might get stuttering. You might get pauses. You might lose bits of the sound. And that's because the internet just can't keep up. It's not designed for this kind of real-time content. The internet was really designed around the idea of web surfing and email, actually even before web surfing, email, something where data didn't have to arrive in order on time. An email can, every bit of data that's transmitted over the internet is divided into chunks called packets. And these packets are transmitted over the internet. With an email, the packets are numbered, but they don't have to arrive in order. You could have number 4 arrive, then number 3, then number 6, then number 2, then number 1, then number 5. On your side, it's reassembled, and you've got an email you can read. But when you're watching video or listening to audio, it has to be played back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those packets have to be played back in order and in a relatively timely fashion. When stuff disappears or stutters, it's because a packet is missing or a packet is slow to arrive or packets have arrived out of order. And these are all things the internet's very good at. Losing packets, slowing them down, or sending them out of order. In fact, when you're watching a streaming video, it may be that packets 1, 3, 5, and 7 went through a server in Hawaii, and packet 2, 4, and 6 went through a server in Germany, and they all arrived to you, and they have to arrive in order in a timely fashion. So one way we handle this is with buffering. Audio and video players both do the same thing. They get ahead 30 seconds or so. That means they're ahead a certain number of packets, let's say 1,000 packets. If one is slow to come in, it just depletes that buffer, but they're still able to play them back. That's why when you first start an audio or video stream, there's often a delay, and then it picks up. Now, every time a packet comes out of order or disappears, you're going to lose data in the buffer, and eventually you can use up the buffer, and you have to rebuffer. So that's one thing that happens on streaming video if your internet is slow or packets are getting lost. This is normal. This is how things work. It's amazing that we're able to watch video for the internet and that it works reliably for the most part. Generally, if you're having trouble, there are three places it could be a problem. Of course, it could be us. It could be our providers, Ustream or Justin or BitGravity. Maybe their servers are hiccuping or whatever. That's why changing servers is the first way to see how things are going. And if one server works better, well, then maybe one of the guys was having trouble. That does happen. It could also be the internet in between you and our servers. It could be slow, or it could be reordering packets, or your bandwidth provider could be, you know, unreliable. A lot of times people buy bandwidth. Notice how they sell bandwidth. As fast as 20 megabits, up to 10 megabits per second. They never say guaranteed minimum 10 megabits per second. They say as many as 10 megabits per second. That means it's often lower. When it's lower, you're going to get more buffering, more stuttering, more issues with internet video and internet audio. And, it's very unusual for a consumer internet service provider to offer any form of a service guarantee. They just don't. They'll say most of the time or some of the time, or it could be as fast as. Finally, the third thing that can go wrong is your own system. Your computer may not be fast enough to keep up. Believe it or not, that can happen. Older computers just can't keep up. But if you have a fast, modern computer, and our servers are okay, most of the time it's your internet service provider. And your best bet is to choose a stream that's lower quality. The lower quality means fewer bits per second. It'll be more robust. It'll survive internet problems better. There's not a lot else to tell you. It's normal. I apologize. If it were up to me, everything would be perfect all the time. But we're doing something pretty unusual. We're doing a television and radio station over the internet only. And that's a lot of work. It's amazing that it works at all. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for trying to watch. I appreciate that, too. I know it's sometimes a little bit frustrating. Steve is on the line. Big Bear.
Hi, Steve. Leo. How are you doing?
Good.
I have a problem with my PC. My motherboard went out on it. So I went and bought a new motherboard that supports the CPU chip. It's a MSI G41M. Now, I put it in, and I put in the hard drive, and I loaded Windows XP. I had no problems with it, except for the fact that I didn't have my key anymore. So after 30 days, I had to put Vista. Now when I go onto the internet, and I start to type like a website address or whatever, it like the screen refreshes, and then I have to retype it. It keeps refreshing. Or if I go into Facebook and I try to type a comment, it'll refresh, and then my whole screen will start flashing. All my icons on my desktop will start rapidly flashing.
Yeah, I would guess. So when you change motherboards, it's not the same motherboard, right? It's a different manufacturer or a different brand model?
Correct. I went from
That's a big, big change. That's like a new computer. And so you can't just take the old hard drive, put it in the new one, and expect it to work. You've got new video card, new sound card, new motherboard drivers.
Yeah, I put in a new video card, a new audio card. I put in a different
But the motherboard, it's like changing the brain, but putting in the same hard drive and expecting it to work. Of course you have problems. So that's not automatic that all works.
Okay.
I would suggest reinstalling Windows, starting from scratch, because you've got...
I've done that twice.
And it still doesn't work.
Well, everything works. It just that one little hiccup. It, like I said, the screen refresh or and then the icons on my desktop start rapidly flashing, and the only way to stop it is to reboot the computer.
So you have done a clean, what they call a clean install.
Correct.
In other words, wiped the hard drive, put a new copy of Windows on, all of that. Are you using the Windows, a generic copy of Windows, not one specific to the old motherboard, right?
No, it was the one that came with the computer when I bought it.
Well, it's okay. There's your problem. You need a window, a generic Windows, because you're using the OEM copy, which probably has drivers for the old motherboard. Once you install a whole new motherboard, it's a new computer. So I guess, you know, it sounds like a video driver problem, frankly. I think the key is to delete all the old, hope this will work, delete all the old drivers in the device manager, get rid of all the old stuff, and then install updates and try to get it. It's a driver issue. You've got old drivers. It's difficult. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, have a great Geek Week. I'll see you next time. Go Niners. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.